Chapter 30. Deep Seven. The next hours ranked among the darkest of Hilo's life. Body scattered, fate of his companions unknown, he waited, a disembodied head in the cold winter abyss of a Missouri wood. Acrid vapors from the burning plain and wood smoke fogged everything nearby, the orange light of the fires ebbing, flaring, and extinguishing in his peripheral vision. Helicopters and planes buzzed overhead, search beams searing through the branches and casting wild shadows on the debris. It took nearly an hour before first responders dropped in to assess the area, and a full three before the first cleanup efforts began in earnest. Flashlights and floodlights slashed through the darkness and haze. There was no one to rescue. The workers cursed, anguished sobs punctuating the night as they performed their gruesome work. A solemn worker in a yellow vest bagged Hilo's head during the deep hours of the night. At sunrise, his body knit together around his heart inside a black body bag, body parts not his rubbing cold and clammy against his legs. After a helicopter ride and drive in a refrigerated truck, he lay in a hangar until the next night when an ash angel named Ruth, posing as an NTSB investigator, cut out his heart and left. At the next dawn, he awakened in a room little bigger than a closet in the Midwest Operations Center. During all the miserable downtime in the darkness of the body bag, one thought burned him over and over. If he had only dropped the cockpit door on the first try, he might have had a chance. His failed attempt had alerted the envoy, and the dread had sent the plane down in a hurry. The blood of the dead stained his hands. If only he'd been faster. If only he'd kicked harder. When Bethel debriefed him, she took the facts and accused him of nothing. But he couldn't escape his own mind. His inexperience had cost lives. He asked about the other planes, but she deflected his questions.
"You will be sent to Deep Seven via courier for further debrief," Bethel said. "Head down to the extraction center now. Please keep the details of the operation confidential."
Bethel left the interrogation room, and Hilo pounded his fist on the table in frustration. Every mission he had ever done was almost good enough. Almost. This time the lack of perfection hurt. What would they say at Deep Seven? He squeezed his fists for a moment, setting his jaw. No more mistakes. He had to do better. If they let him do anything at all. Dolorum's invitation to leave the Ash Angel organization popped into his head, but he couldn't do it. He had to see this through. The extraction center door waited near the stairway that led up to Raphael's Goodwill Barn. Cassandra and Corinth leaned against the wall, both wearing a nondescript blue jumper like his. Even Corinth looked solemn and was staring at the floor. Cassandra had her arms folded in front of her and regarded Hilo expressionlessly as he approached.
"So, what happened in that cockpit, Hilo?" she asked.
Was the tone accusatory? "Look, I blew it, okay?"
"That's not what I meant," Cassandra said.
Hilo breathed out, closing his eyes for a moment. "I hardly made it into the cockpit. As soon as I hit the door the first time, the envoy pushed the plane to full throttle and went for the ground. We were so low that by the time I got the door down, it was too late. Just too late." Recounting the scene dredged up the memory of the screams and the blaring of alarms and the fatal collision. He was glad Ash Angels didn't sleep. His dreams would never again be safe.
"So the flight crew was dead?"
"Yes. He broke one's neck and bent the other in half." Hilo leaned against the wall and covered his face for a moment. "Look, this is my fault. I didn't gauge the strength I would need to get the cockpit door down. If I could have knocked it down the first time, I would have had a shot at the envoy before he sent the plane down. Or if I had gotten there faster, the plane wouldn't have been so low to the ground."
"Look, Hilo," Cassandra said sternly. "This isn't on you, okay? I'm not saying it won't come up, but we survived. We're the only team that did. 9 more blanks gone."
Hilo shut his eyes and leaned his head against the wall. Cassandra touched his arm.
"I wish we could have saved the people, Hilo, we all do, but we aren't gods." Did Dahlia ever explain what she wanted?
Hilo nodded and related their conversation and her absorption of the Vexus after the crash. Cassandra's face screwed up in confusion, and Corinth appeared nonplussed.
I'm sure I'll be accused of making stuff up again. I really thought this woman wanted to help us, but maybe she was there to distract us.
Have some backbone, Hilo, Cassandra said. Don't let Arcus Ebenezer call you a liar. At the very least, both Corinth and I saw her, so we know she's not a figment of your imagination.
And she's totally hot for a dread, Corinth said.
Cassandra shot Corinth a withering look.
Really, Chumpkins? After what she did? Maybe you should open your brain before you open your mouth.
Corinth threw up his arms.
I'm just saying, Cassie. Just an observation. You always said I should be more observant.
Observing women hasn't been a big problem for you, Chumpkins.
Hilo cleared his throat.
So where's Goldbone?
Cassandra shrugged.
I have no idea. My phone's destroyed and no one is talking. He'll have to drive back from Dallas now. All the planes in the country are grounded.
You don't think they'll pin this on Blanks, do you? Hilo asked.
Not this specifically, she answered. But they're pretty sure one of us is behind this data breach. Not that they can peg this on a breach. This was a standard vision. We responded in a standard way, and we failed. The only unusual part of this equation was Dahlia. She was looking for you specifically and knew what plane you were on. She even knew what seat. That looks bad.
Bad how? Hilo asked.
Bad like you guys know each other. Might be working together.
Working together?
Hilo started pacing.
Where is Deep Seven?
I don't know. Very few know its exact location. We'll be arriving there in an envelope. Only the Archai and select members of other groups work there, and even some of them don't know where they are. I've never been. That we're being called in is serious. Not a good serious.
We'll arrive in an envelope?
Yep. Remember that heart thing you were so fascinated with? You've just gotten a small taste. This little heart trip will be done a bit more officially.
A young Ash Angel in a white lab coat worn over blue scrubs approached them, glancing at a cheap watch. A full head of curly black hair bounced with the gait of his stride.
You the three headed for Deep Seven?
Yes, Cassandra said.
I'm Lancelot, the heart courier tech for this center, he said, unlocking the white door. We've got to hurry.
Lancelot led them to a small room and flicked on the fluorescent lights. Pumpkin orange walls assaulted Hilo's eyes. The room looked like a low-rent doctor's office. The padded brown examination chair with paper drawn over it waited on one side while a faux wood counter ran along the other, two curious devices sitting on top of it. One was chrome with two posts attached to a multi-tool blade that would have been at home in a medieval torture gallery, except for a small, attached screen at the end with the posts. The other device had the shape and buttons of an aluminum blender with a small propane tank attached to its base. Lancelot opened a cabinet door and pulled out three manila envelopes, the interior of each lined with plastic. He handed the envelopes and three pens to them.
Please write your name on the envelope as well as your Ash Angel ID.
Hilo closed his eyes.
I don't have an Ash Angel ID.
What? Lancelot asked, confused.
It's typically a seven.
I know, Hilo growled, praying for patience and mercy and any other virtue he might need to acquire to help him through these situations. Cassandra smirked, and Hilo calmed himself.
I was deliberately not given one. I am not in the system.
Oh. Okay, Lancelot said, a little put off.
Just the name, then.
So, who would like to be first?
Hop up there, Chumpkins, and show Hilo how it's done, Cassandra ordered.
Corinth frowned.
How come you call him by his Ash Angel name? He's barely graduated.
He's earned it. Now shut up and let this guy cut your heart out.
The tech grabbed the medieval-looking device and secured its two posts to waiting receptacles on the examination table. Corinth lifted his shirt. Using handles on the monitor side of the device, the tech manipulated the cutting blades. Once through the outer abdominal wall, the attached monitor sprung to life, showing Corinth's innards. With skillful slices, Lancelot removed a very cleanly cut out heart.
Seems like a knife or hole saw would be faster, Hilo speculated.
We do it this way to minimize the damage, the tech explained while he took a thick needle and stitched the cuts in Corinth's abdominal wall back together. We want the Ash Angel to have as much normalcy in appearance and mobility as possible.
The tech carried the heart to the blender-like device. Since it was opaque, they were spared the sight but not the sound of grinding blades shredding Corinth's heart into little chunks. Once finished, the tech clicked on the room fan.
One more step and we're done.
He punched a red button on the device, and the propane hissed into the chamber, followed by the flash of blue fire around the lid. Corinth's heart was incinerated. The tech pressed another button to cool the ashes and remove the smoke. When he popped the lid off, the smell of burnt flesh filled the room until an automatic deodorizer in the ceiling fan spritzed the air and turned charred heart into springtime potpourri. Corinth held open his envelope, and the tech dumped the ashes inside.
Seal it up and leave it on the desk. Next.
After Lancelot finished with Cassandra and Hilo, Ruth arrived, looking rushed. She took the envelopes and stuffed them into a briefcase.
We're pushing it on this one, she said. My apologies if you all wake up in the back of a car.
She jogged up the stairs to Raphael's Goodwill barn, eyes on her phone.
Now I've got to give you the standard speech about precautions, the tech warned them. No pools, bathtubs, lakes, etc. You should avoid strenuous activity.
Save it, Cassandra said. They're not letting us out of here, and there isn't enough water in this place to fill a Dixie cup.
About that, Bethel wants you all to wait for dawn in the conference room and not to wander around, Lancelot said.
Cassandra rolled her eyes.
Quarantined. Great.
Several hours later, Hilo probed the extraction cut. Not having a heart felt weird, even though he technically didn't feel anything.
I thought you'd like this, Hilo, Cassandra said, apparently noticing his discomfort. I just hope hell isn't waiting on the other side.
You think we're in trouble? Corinth asked worriedly.
I don't know what to think, but yeah, Cassandra said. The silence feels odd. But with the number of normals that died, someone's head is going to roll. I honestly don't think I'll be a team leader after this.
No way, Corinth exclaimed. What could we have done? It was doomed the moment the envoy got in that cockpit. If we would have known you was in there before we were in flight, maybe we could have stopped it.
How did you guys find out he was in there at all? Hilo asked.
One of the flight attendants pulled him out of the cockpit for some reason, Cassandra explained. I managed to catch a glimpse of him as he left the galley. Total luck. I wonder if any of the teams besides us knew. They might have gone down without much of a fight.
Hilo shook his head.
Look, Cassie, this was my fault all the way.
I blew it when— Shut up, Jawhead, we've been over that, okay? Once you tell them about Dahlia, I don't think they'll be talking about much else. There are no classes on how much strength to apply to a locked cockpit door. I doubt anyone's ever really done it.
A chime in the room sounded at 10 seconds until dawn.
See you on the flip side, guys, Corinth said.
The conference room disappeared, replaced by a brushed chrome ceiling. Hilo squinted at white LED lights embedded into carved-out half-spheres in the metal. He was in a supine position on a gray metal slab extended out of a wall. The room looked like a sleeping chamber in a spaceship from a science fiction movie. Softly glowing floor panels cast a diffuse light that admitted no shadows into the 10-by-10-foot space. A deep shelf on the back wall held the discarded manila envelope, a lanyard with a visitor's badge, and clothing. Underwear, a navy blue jumpsuit, and some black slip-on shoes. The wall opposite him was glassy, the others the same brushed chrome as the ceiling. Hilo swung his legs off the slab and stood. As soon as his bare feet hit the floor, the wall opposite the slab lit up and became a gigantic screen, an attractive, dark-haired woman in a jumpsuit standing there. He covered up for modesty until he realized it was a recording. She smiled and started talking.
Welcome to Deep Seven, a state-of-the-art facility housing command and control for the Ash Angel organization. My name is Anna, and I'll help you make your stay at Deep Seven as comfortable as possible. To your right, you will find clothing and a visitor's badge. Please put on the clothing and wear the badge at all times while in Deep Seven. While you clothe, I will explain more about this marvelous facility paid for through dividends on Ash Angel Investments. If you wish to skip this information, simply say skip.
Hilo donned the garb waiting for him and grabbed his badge to find that the Ash Angel ID listed was all zeros. His badge picture was a large gray square, name listed as Ash Angel Name. He grinned. His lack of proper credentials had probably set some office cog's life back several hours. Anna droned on.
Deep Seven was commissioned in 1990, and construction began at an undisclosed location in 1994. The facility was completed in 1999, though continual upgrades have been installed to take advantage of the latest technological advancements. You are currently on the top level of Deep Seven, the Visitor's Lounge. Deep Seven has 8 more levels beneath this one, including crew quarters, command and control facilities, a recreational level, the Reliquarium and Ash Angel Historical Library, Armory and Security, the Council Chamber, and mechanical and computing areas. As a visitor, your badge has been encoded to allow you access to the areas listed on the screen. Once you are done reviewing the list, say, continue.
Hilo looked and found he only had access to one area, called Error 1005.3, Ash Angel ID missing or corrupted, unable to retrieve area access listing, script terminated. No matter how politely or loudly he said continue or skip, Anna regarded him with a pleasant expression, a looping animation of her shifting her weight and looking at her watch, repeating every 10 seconds. Knowing a dead computer program when he saw one, Hilo walked toward the door, only to have it squawk angrily at him and highlight the entire doorframe in red. Access denied, the room informed him in a deep male voice that would have perfectly suited movie trailer narration. Somehow Hilo knew it would not be the first time he heard that phrase today. After pacing about and trying various commands and tricks to see if he could reboot Anna, he resorted to something low-tech, knocking on the door. A perplexed Goldbo rescued him.
Stuck, Hilo?
Hilo showed him his pointless badge and Goldbo laughed.
Nice. Come on, I'll show you around up here. Sorry about the plane. I couldn't believe it when I heard. I thought I'd lost her. You. Well, all of you. Thanks for getting that plane down on land. I owe you one, brother.
Hilo nodded. He didn't feel like anyone should owe him anything. He had failed. People, a lot of innocent people, were dead. Goldbo led him out of a hallway that had 6 arrival chambers, 3 to a side. Ahead, the visitor's lounge waited.
Deep Seven is basically a big cylinder in the ground with an elevator running through the middle, Goldbo explained. All the levels have these cool floors. I did some guard duty here my first year. The command and control level feels like the deck of a starship. You'll like it.
The decor of the lounge was more like the lobby of an upscale hotel. The high-tech floors ended, abutting with brown ceramic tile. In the middle, leather couches surrounded a square stonework pillar rising into the high ceiling. TV screens affixed to the pillar piped in news from the outside. The base of the pillar was a natural gas fireplace with windows to all 4 sides. Colorful fish darted about in a saltwater aquarium that ran along the curved wall on the backside. Glassy, teardrop coffee tables offered various tablets for reading or surfing the internet. Hilo stopped and folded his arms. Coverage of the wrecks continued on the news, and he and Goldbo watched for several minutes.
This one's got the normals really confused, Goldbo said. Apparently the envoys didn't even bother to hide the bodies of the pilots they replaced, so now they've found 4 pilots dead in their homes and no pilots dead in the wreckage. Talk about conspiracy theories. No one's taken responsibility. No demands, no political manifestos. I'm sure aliens will be blamed, unless the Skolas invent some terrorist group just to end the guesswork.
Where are Cassandra and Corinth? Hilo asked.
They took them down already. They wanted you and Cassie first, but since you weren't out yet, they took Corinth. Not sure what I'm supposed to do here, since my part was just sitting at the Dallas airport hoping Cassie wasn't dead.
You think you can get her back? Hilo ventured.
Well, this is the thing, Hilo.
Whatever Cassie dislikes, she destroys. Whatever she loves, she adores. She loved me once. I want it back.
Hilo nodded, trying to picture what an adoring Cassandra would even look like. What would Goldbo and Cassandra talk about or do for fun? He could envision them at the shooting range, blowing up fresh produce from 50 yards and settling agreements with bludgeoning weapons. The elevator chimed, and they turned back toward the center of the cylindrical structure. A thin ash angel in a gray business suit walked out, flanked by two burly Michaels packing BBGs in oversized holsters on their hips. The man had delicate features and a small head with expertly cropped black hair. He was morphed to around 30, though it appeared he had aged his face to give it an edgier look. Goldbo's face scrunched up, eyes nervous and even a little apprehensive.
"Which one of you is Hilo?" the man asked, scanning the badges.
Hilo raised his hand.
"Come with me, please," he ordered, turning back to the elevator and allowing the muscle to do the encouraging.
"Good luck," Goldbo said, looking relieved. The trip took him a scant 2 floors down.
"Deep 7 security," the elevator informed them in an innocuous voice.
"Surveillance, detention, armory, and interrogation."
The elevator door slid open. The man led the way while reviewing information on his tablet, the guards following behind, Hilo in the middle. They led him to a door labeled Interrogation Room 2 and signaled for him to enter and sit in a metallic chair with restraints. The entire room seemed made of a glassy plastic substance and was spotless. A table and another metallic chair sat across from him, a large mirror, no doubt two-way, on the opposite side. The Michaels grabbed his wrists to restrain him, and Hilo resisted.
"What's going on?" he yelled at the man with the tablet.
He regarded Hilo expressionlessly.
"Standard procedure."
Hilo submitted, the guards clapping his wrists inside the metallic cuffs that clicked as they trapped him. The man nodded to the guards and they left. He placed the tablet on the table and the glass top sprang to life, files filling the space.
"My name is Faust, and I am representing the Archai and the Medius today. Our session will be recorded. You are known as Hilo, formerly Trace Evans?"
"Yes. What's with all the—"
"And your team leader is Cassandra?"
"Yes."
"All right. Then let's begin. First, as per the dictate of Grand Arcus Gabriel, we need proof of Ash Angel bestowal. I understand you have strength and inspire. Since dreads can also have strength, I will need you to use inspire on me. Begin."
"You'll have to touch my hand."
He complied, and Hilo poured his virtus into Faust while saying, "If you smile, more people will like you." Faust pulled his hand away, eyes flashing. He tapped on the table and entered a few notes on his tablet before looking up and meeting Halo's eyes with a grave stare.
"I should inform you that the particulars of the failed Dreamliner mission have already been covered by your associates. They indicate that you had a conversation with a dread female, Dahlia. Is this correct?"
"Yes."
"According to our records, this was your third interaction with her. Are there other encounters you have not reported?"
"No."
"Are you sure?"
"Yes."
He typed in a few more notes.
"Going back to your first encounter with this Dahlia, please tell me everything she has said to you. Under Article 29.3 of the Ash Angel Legal Code, I am required to tell you that this will be recorded and could be used in a tribunal."
"Tribunal?
What do you think I—" "Nervous, Hilo? Do you have a reason to fear a tribunal?"
"No."
"No? I think you do."
Faust leaned forward.
"Dahlia, I want everything she's said to you, including information you've withheld."
Hilo related his conversations to the best of his recollection while Faust looked on, expressionless. When Hilo got to the part where Dahlia identified herself as Aklima, Faust took more notes. But as Hilo began to relate the rest of the events of the doomed flight, Faust held him up.
"What happened during the flight has already been recorded, including your failure to gain access to the cockpit in a timely fashion."
Hilo felt like someone had punched him in the gut. They were going to hang this on him. Maybe they should. Faust tapped a few more times while Hilo fumed, wondering if he would ever make it out of Deep Seven. That he could ever be a prisoner in the Ash Angel organization had never crossed his mind. Would they really lock him up for failing his mission? "Do you know this person?" Faust asked, turning the tablet toward Trace. And there he was, the man that had tried to kill him in the bathtub. "That's the one," Hilo said, trying to lift his hand to point and remembering he was restrained. "He's the one in the graveyard video and the one I ran into in the Hammer Bar and Grill. Who is he?"
"You tell me,"
Faust said, leaning back in his chair portentously. "What? I have no idea." Faust let silence reign for several uncomfortable moments.
"I think you know more than you're letting on, Hilo."
"Why would you think that?"
"It just seems that you've had a particular knack for rather conveniently escaping Dreds and Shadim. I doubt there are any Ash Angel operatives alive who have seen as many creatures of evil in one place and lived to tell the tale. It seems you even have a little Dread Guardian Angel who shows up to warn you of danger. Isn't that right?"
"I told you her reasons." Faust let go a derisive chuckle.
"Yes, this mystery talisman that controls the Dreads. She wants to partner with us, is that right? So she can get her free will back? You do realize how ludicrous this all sounds, don't you? I mean, you don't seem like a particularly creative guy. But in all my days sitting in this chair, I don't think I've heard anyone spout this level of preposterous nonsense. So why don't you cut the bull and tell us what you've been up to?"
Hilo leaned forward and was about to say something rather un-angel-like when the door slid open. Grand Arcus Gabriel stood in the doorway wearing a blue Deep Seven uniform and military-style cap with the Halo Sword logo in gold thread on the front. While both Faust and Gabriel looked grave, Gabriel added a regal, commanding touch to it that meant business. Faust stood up.
"Grand Arcus," he stammered. "I wasn't expecting you. I was nearly done."
"Why is this man restrained?" Gabriel asked.
"Standard procedure. Arcus Ramus ordered that Hilo be interrogated as a potential hostile," Faust explained.
It took Hilo a moment to realize he'd called Ramus an Arcus instead of an Archon. Ramus had been promoted. "Let him go. Now," Gabriel ordered. "I'll take this up with Ramus." Faust came around the desk to release the restraints, but Hilo flared his strength and ripped out of them, ruining the arms of the chair.
"He'll be filling out a 1399-EQ on that," Faust hissed.
"No, I won't," Hilo retorted, tossing what was left of the restraints on the desk, the glass cracking and warping the screen. Gabriel grinned. "Follow me, Hilo. We need to talk." They left Faust and the security level behind, Gabriel keeping silent until the doors on the elevator closed. "Since this is your first time in Deep Seven, I think you should get a look at the Reliquarium. It's a nice place to have a private conversation, and someone wants to meet you. I apologize for all this. Unfortunately, the directives I intended to spur the discovery of the leak have instead led to a hunt for scapegoats. The Bible says humans were made a little lower than the angels. Sometimes I can't tell the difference at all."
"The Reliquarium," the elevator chimed. Then,
"Access denied." Hilo stepped back, Gabriel forward, and the door slid open. They stepped into a circular domed room, a large steel door sealed with horizontal steel bars waiting at the other end. It looked like a bank vault. Two Michael guards stood at attention as the Grand Arcus stepped in, and a woman at a long counter on the side of the room rose from her chair where she had been typing on a console. "Open it up, Naomi," Gabriel ordered.
"Yes, sir," the woman replied, returning to her console.
Machinery clanked and whirred as the steel bars retracted into the wall. Heavy double doors pulled apart ponderously, slowly revealing a dimly lit space beyond. They entered the spacious, vaulted library and reliquarium,
the doors shutting them in after they crossed the threshold. A row of curved silver shelves were built onto the outer curved wall. They held hundreds of mismatched objects, some of them glowing with an angelic aura. These were the sanctified shed-killing weapons he had heard about, each created by the sacrifice of an ash angel. The other objects seemed a menagerie of odds and ends: a pair of glasses, a rock, articles of clothing, paintings, and a host of ordinary, everyday items. The interior of the room was filled by packed shelves, curved to match the shape of the room. Books, old and new, lined the shelves, and one section held scrolls, stone tablets, and metallic plates. But the most interesting feature was light. None of the illuminated squares in the floor or the LED lights in the ceiling were lit, but a bright light shone from somewhere behind all the shelves, and that light illuminated the room just enough for them to see, even from their position just in front of the doors. The light gradually moved toward them, and when it came into view, the radiance hung Hilo's mouth open. He had seen Cassandra's gift of glorious presence, but it seemed but a dim copy of the burning radiance of the angel in front of him. She smiled as she approached, friendly brown eyes falling on her visitors. She was a beautiful African-American woman, her glory so powerful and intimidating, Hilo couldn't meet her eye and had a hard time resisting the urge to kneel. "Who is she?" Hilo whispered to Gabriel, who regarded her fondly as she walked toward them. "Is she an angel? A real one?" Gabriel smiled. "No more than you or I. Well, a little more, I think. This is Rachel, the Unascended."